Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Yes, yes, welcome, dear congregation, as we offer forgiveness to those less holy than ourselves. That sounds unbearably smug.
It does a little, doesn't it?
We are, though. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. These individuals seek absolution for previous trespasses on this here Confessions podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Greatest Hits Radio. That's right. Greatest Hits Radio is providing this particular podcast. Sister Holly is out of the tack cupboard.
Indeed I am.
Brother Matthew is still in his gutter after his New Year festivities. And coming up, as usual, we'll be catching up with your correspondence in the parish notice board, and we'll take a look at those tales of terror in our not-for-broadcast section. It's also the first proper Confessions podcast of the new year. You had a bumper Best of Confessions Part 1 and 2 to keep you busy over the break, but this is the first week of our brand new Confessions from the Drive Time Show, Greatest Hits Radio, 4 till 7, 5 stars. We have the last confession of 2024 from Victoria, involving a mince pie mix-up whenever I see your smiling face, Andrew's mum's boozy switcheroo in Whiskey in the Jar, Jackie's police prank call in Baby, You Can Steal My Car, Nobby's confession, and on the conveyor belt tonight, but first, Darren's confession featuring vodka, geese, and some incredible Ukrainian accents in Goose Goose Duck.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
So let's see where today's confession takes us. This comes from Darren. Darren, thank you. Oh, there's a foreign accent.
Foreign accent? Oh, excellent.
Dear Simon and the avalanche of asymmetric ablutions.
Yeah, that's us.
Ooh.
These events took place in Ukraine in the days of the Soviet Union. So this is probably the most ancient confession that we've had. And involved neighbours of my wife's auntie Antonia. She often recounted this sombre saga to her nieces. It all took place in the sunny region of Ukraine, where there is certainly a village. In this otherwise tranquil place, there were a couple who kept geese. This is the Sumy region of Ukraine, by the way, in case you're checking the map just to make sure you know where it is. We'll call this couple Pasha and Dasha. Like all good Ukrainian villagers, Pasha and Dasha spent most... This feels like a fairy tale.
It does a little.
Spent most of their time farming their land and preparing for the epic winter by stocking up the cellar, plus any freezer, with this year's abundant harvest. Unlike all, but definitely like some Ukrainian village folk, they also made their own vodka.
All
accounts, not alcohol-free, but actually super strong stuff.
Yeah.
It was at least made sustainably, and the vodka mash was thrown onto the compost heap at the end of the process. No judgment there. However, this pastoral scene now takes a more disturbing turn. Pasha and Dasha had awoken early to collect some goose eggs for breakfast, only to find out that all the geese had died, suddenly and mysteriously, overnight. Auntie Antonia was hazy on the numbers here, but it was a lot of geese. And insert award-winning accent here, Simon. And for pointers, the accent from Sumy is quite similar to Belarusian. And therefore, according to Anyuta, hilarious. So please, Simon, don't feel in any way restrained.
No, don't be restrained.
So, Auntie Antonia was hazy on the numbers, but there were a lot of geese who were dead. And I quote, there were many, many goose kaput, kaput, kaputska.
Hang on. I mean, come on.
Where were they from?
Belarus. It's from Belarus.
I thought it was Italy.
Saying the accent is similar to Belarusian doesn't really help very much. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, the geese are dead. This was, of course, quite distressing. But in Soviet Ukraine, waste not, want not was, I'm almost sure, a motto. So the former goose owners quickly set about plucking the birds, ready for the freezer. However, as they couldn't fit all the geese, into the freezer just yet, and homemade vodka was surely beckoning, they left the deceased in the garden. Time passed.
Yes.
What?
But then all of a sudden, Pasha and Dasha were violently roused by unacceptably loud honking sounds.
Rushing outside, they were utterly poleaxed, no offence to the Poles, by the sight that confronted their bleary eyes. Brazenly standing before them was an entire flock of definitely alive but naked, and more importantly now sober, geese. Yes, the vodka mash, thrown onto the compost heap earlier, hadn't had a moment to decompose before those feathered felons had recycled it in their own special way, and as a result, ended up absolutely basted.
Oh, my goodness.
The way geese do. Simon, I ask forgiveness not from Auntie Antonia, who is sadly no longer with us, or from her neighbours, Pasha and Dasha, nor from the geese, who almost got themselves cooked with their little antics of getting themselves too drunk to find a pulse. Plus, feathers grow back again. Who knew about this? Obviously not me. It's a bit like when Jeff Goldblum said, life finds a way in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, just like that.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I do seek forgiveness from my wife, Anyuta, who gave strict instructions not to give this story a broader audience as she finds it slightly uncultured behaviour coming out of her homeland. Her opinion can be quite harsh at times, like when she refused to watch The Muppet Christmas Carol because the Muppets are just showing off pieces of cloth.
Aren't they? I hadn't thought of that.
I may have digressed. Apologies.
Yeah. I like that.
Yours dubiously, Darren in Ashford. The other one, he says. Okay, well, obviously the one somewhere in Ukraine. We've never had a confession from Ukraine in the Soviet period at all. But anyway, very interesting. A little fairy tale, I think, with Pasha and Dasha. And it had a happy ending because the geese survived. They were just paralytic on the heavy vodka. What do you say, Sister Suze?
Well, Darren, I feel like they could have been a bit more responsible with where they put their vodka mash.
And really? Where would you put it then?
Well, just somewhere not accessible to animals, if I had animals.
Right. You're going to be quite hardline
container
about it? Okay. I mean, what a way to go if you...
Yeah,
they thought these geese were dead.
But they weren't, and they lived to fight another day, even though they were naked. Yeah.
Probably. That makes it okay, does it?
Yeah.
It does not. It's not forgiven.
Okay, yeah, Brother Matthew.
I mean, I'm going to forgive for a number of reasons. I mean, it's the first confession of the year,
so
it would be churlish not to forgive. The other reason is the accents. Goodness me.
Many Gusta Kapuchka.
Yes.
Definitely
absolutely
Italian.
Belarus. Definitely going to forgive for that. And they did the vodka mash. It was a graveyard smash. So for that reason...
I'm
going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's confession.
And the geese survive, so everybody wins. Plus, apparently, my Ukrainian accent very close to Belarusian, and who knew that?
Was it, though?
Yeah.
I think so. And they did say quite clearly, you can get away with anything.
Yes.
Anything.
Whether I got away with that,
who knows? So.
Anyway, it turns out that all of that kind of stuff is far more common than you think. Here's what Doina had to say in The People's Verdict.
And Doina says, forgiven, I'm originally from a small village in eastern Romania, and much like Ukraine, everyone had a small distillery in their house and got geese drunk and featherless on the ratchy leftovers. Eastern European stories for you.
Very good. Well, if we have a swathe of Central and Eastern European confessions, that'll be a very good thing. Mm. Also, some confessions from the communist years of the Soviet Union. That would be amazing.
That'll get the ratings flooding in.
Don't you think?
Oh, yes. Yes, please. More of those.
I think there's...
A bit of perestroika. Some of that.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. So, confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk, obviously. Before we head back to the confessional booth, it's time to pause for a moment and take a trip to the parish notice board, where we delve into the mailbag to hear from you, our very lovely listeners. This is the tradition. Firstly, over to Matt. What do you have there?
Yes, as is my wont, I have been trawling the reviews for this podcast, and the only ones I'm interested in reading are those that give us 5 stars. So 5 stars, says Rufus P. I've been enjoying this podcast very much, listening to it when out walking or running. It can, however, make breathing difficult, as I often cackle with laughter at some of the stories. Others bring me to an abrupt stop so that I can clutch my brow in horror, such as the one with the unpopular old lady that fell into a grave. That will now become a classic, I think. Old lady falling in the grave.
That's a good one.
Kicked into the grave.
By the priest.
Indeed. Thank you for the podcast. It never fails to delight. Perhaps one day I should contribute my own confession about the time I did an April Fool on a class I taught by giving them a word search with no words in it at all.
Excellent.
And seeing how long it took them to realise what I'd done. NB should not be done with a bottom set class, as you'll be compelled to confess to them after they spent 20 minutes diligently searching away, commenting that the word search was very, very tricky.
I mean, indeed, it's kind of thrown a confession away. We could have had...
We could definitely have had that.
10 minutes.
Definitely would have got that, Rufus. Well done. Charlie's grandpa says, 5 stars, had a great journey home from Leicester on Sunday, listening to the magnificent Confessions podcast and reliving the mighty Wolves back winning again. Keep it up. I can't remember that being in the Confessions, unless it was the mighty Wolves winning again when he was listening. Either of those could have worked.
That could well have happened, yeah. Although they only drew against Tottenham. They didn't win.
So that is true, because you were there, weren't you,
for the mighty draw. It wasn't particularly a mighty draw.
At least the goals were real.
Anyway, I would like to say, Wolves, please never play in that colour ever again.
Oh, really? What colour were they playing?
It was like the colour of the red cabbage that you had at Christmas.
Right. What, purple?
Yes.
What colour did that?
Livid, spectacular purple. Because Wolves play in gold. Mm-hmm. That's their colour. It's one of the most famous strips. And if you're going to have a second strip, don't have it in putrid red cabbage colour.
Okay. Mm. That's certainly a
view. Just saying. Anyway, thank you very much indeed, Charlie's grandpa. Any requests for the cupboard du tat, Holly?
Well, no requests this week, but we actually got a mug sent to us.
Oh,
which,
wow,
I liked. A few months ago, we sent a mug to Darcy Stilp. She's a 13-year-old fan in Wisconsin, United States. I think you'll agree that in the picture, she's holding that
respect
and with pride.
As though it's her favourite thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really loving it. It's fantastic. And according to Dad Andy, she now has a habit of spontaneously breaking out into the greatest hits radio jingle.
Ah.
Quiet house, loud restaurant, car ride, zoo, library, church, courthouse. It doesn't really matter where. She always breaks out into it. Happens to the best of us.
Okay, so... What has she done?
So she got a mug, and then they sent us a Wisconsin mug, which I'm going to show you both here. Here it is.
Oh, wow,
Wisconsin.
Look at the size of that.
There it is.
How big are their mugs?
That's enormous.
It's hefty.
It's an American
really
mug,
hefty.
That, isn't it? Wow.
I think this was actually given to us a while ago, but it took a month or so for the postal room Nick to give it to us. So apologies for the
late
thank you.
But it's in one piece.
It is in one piece.
It's in one piece,
and
it's right
here. Nick has not robbed off with it, so that's a blessing. Oh, it's very classy, that.
Starbucks, yeah. Wisconsin. There you go.
Wow, it's you get a pint of coffee into this.
Mm, impressive.
I think it's very impressive. It weighs a ton, actually.
It does.
So where's what's going to happen to that? I think you should take it home, Molly, because you're in charge.
And yes, I will have a nice cup of tea in it and very much enjoy myself.
Thank you. It's red and white, so I don't want that in my house. Anyway,
that's true.
But thanks. I don't know if this is going to become a thing with people sending us mugs.
Send us stuff. Wow, what a grand idea.
Keep
that
your
twist.
Additions to the parish notice board coming in. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. A couple of mentions to Cherryade 1985, Tommy Matthews, Mr. Llama 98765.
I mean, come on, Mr. Llama.
Definitely.
How many
a bot.
Mr. Llamas are there?
Clearly, there aren't 98,765, are there?
Oh, dear.
Who were amongst those who got in touch with the secret code phrase, which was, of course, where have you been? Matt will have a new secret code phrase at the end of this podcast. Now we're going to take a step into the dark side, our Mark Knopfler broadcast section. These are the confessions that are just too gross or illegal or seedy or deemed inappropriate to be read out on a live radio show on Drive Time. Starting with Gazza, but probably not that one. Although that Gazza probably had quite a few things to confess.
Yes, he did.
Gazza, now reading your story, it sounds like you had some really horrible next-door neighbours blaring music every night, then parking over your driveway, and a suspicious aroma coming from their house. All valid reasons to be upset, but going out in the middle of the night and keying their brand new car...
What? No.
It's not good behaviour.
Oh, my goodness.
In fact, it's illegal, and so therefore...
You can't do that. What on earth?
Yeah, no.
Makes them think we're going to read that act. Oh, what?
We have, of course, forwarded this to the local constabulary.
That's not on. Keying the car.
Michelle, I totally understand why you were annoyed when the customer from hell turned up at your hairdresser's, complaining about every little thing in the salon. The water was too hot. Oh, it was too cold. The chair was uncomfy. The cup of tea was weak or too strong, but deliberately giving her a wonky haircut wasn't it? Actually, that's quite good. She got angry, yeah. You got angry, and then you called her some very unsavoury names.
Oh. All
that's not, you know. If you had just given her a terrible haircut, I forgot to say that's okay.
Yes. And then call her some horrible names.
Yeah, you're
that
bat.
Is excellent. That anyway. Should have got on. I mean, come on, that's very good. I like that one.
Who
a lot.
Decided that wasn't fit for broadcast?
Both myself and Sister Susie. It was the unsavoury names. It was not good. It was bad. I read some of them and it was really quite poor.
What were the names?
Okay. Obviously.
Blast.
Blast and Mother.
Yes, we're not going to.
Rotter and Cad.
Rotter and Cad, yep.
Anyway, so totally disgusting behaviour. So they didn't make it on. These are the ones that did, though. Let's go back to the ones that made the cut. Neighbour John gets a nasty surprise in Andrew's tale, Whiskey in the Jar.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Andrew, which I believe is his real name, because it goes like this. Father Simon and the Confessional Collective. Ordinarily, Simon, you would change the names of all the players involved in a confession.
Oh.
On this occasion, I would like the main players' real names to be used. I think it is appropriate, and I'm sure my late mother would wholeheartedly agree.
Oh.
With a knowing smile.
Okay.
My name is Andrew, and the confessional occurred on Boxing Day 1973. I was a 17-year-old, fast approaching 18. I lived at home in Waterlooville in Hampshire with my mum, Pat. I had an older brother and sister. Let's call them Bonnie and Clyde, or even Jekyll and Hyde. Either would be quite suitable if you ask me. So when we're using actual names, it doesn't extend to brother and sister. We had the most fabulous neighbours living next to us, a wonderfully friendly Scottish couple called Ina and John, whom back in the day really loved their drink and really knew how to party.
They sound great.
John and Ina had three children, one lad and two seriously attractive young ladies, whom I fancied something rotten, but that's another story. Anyhow, since we had moved into the area a few years earlier, my mum would always invite John and Ina around for a drink or two on Boxing Day by way of a thank you for being so kind and supportive to all of us, because they were, and they still are, in fact, the salt of the earth. So there we all were, 26 December 1973, in my mum's living room. My mum had laid on a small spread for us to enjoy. Slade playing in the background, lots of chatter and laughing. My mum sat John and Ina down in the comfy chairs with a plate of nibbles and poured them each a drink. My mum raised a glass to toast our lovely neighbours. John had a single malt whiskey, and the ladies and us kids had a small Harvey's Bristol Cream Sherry.
Okay. Mm.
That's disappointing, really.
It is a little.
But anyway. So John says, down in one, he says. Anyway, down in one it goes. And then up it comes again.
Oh,
a fine spray from his nostrils and mouth. John started coughing and spluttering uncontrollably, choking. His face seemed to turn a reddy purpley colour, the way they did in the 1970s. Ina was in a flash. She was up, slapping his back, and Mum then joined in, slapping his back as well. John started waving his arms about. Poor chap was unable to speak. I think he was trying to say, stop slapping me. But the more he waved his arms around, the more they started to slap him again. This was getting violent. Anyway, after what seemed an age, John got his breath back. With a croaky voice, uttered, water, several times. Water, water. See that?
Yeah, very good.
Mum rushed off and returned easier than the Ukrainian from yesterday.
Yeah, I thought so.
My mum rushed off and returned with a glass of water. After swallowing half a glass, John's voice started to recover, and he said to my mum in a shaky, throaty voice, "There's something not right with the whiskey, Pat." So my mum picked up his glass and had a couple of sniffs of the contents, and then she cried out in a sort of surprised and anguished way, "Oh my word!" Also, good heavens above, that's the way we spoke in the 70s. Mm-hmm. She picked up half a bottle of whiskey and disappeared into the kitchen without a word. Returning a few minutes later with a fresh, rather larger glass of whiskey, my mum just simply said with a smile, "You'll enjoy this one, John," and offered no explanation. The incident was quickly forgotten and we all had a jolly good time for the next couple of hours. And several hours later, after everyone had left, I asked my mum what the issue was with the whiskey. And she says, "It's far too embarrassing, Andrew. I won't be telling anyone. Ever." and that just made me more intrigued, so I kept badgering and pestering my mother, and finally she relented and swore me to secrecy. And it transpired that my mum had kept this bottle of whiskey tucked away in a cupboard for special occasions, and mainly for our neighbour John. And some months earlier, my mum had noticed that the bottle was in a different position and seemed less full. Someone had been secretly helping themselves to it. So she marked the bottle a couple of times over the following weeks, and surprise, surprise, someone was having a quiet swig from time to time. So rather than confront her children, she decided she would teach the culprit a lesson and came up with a plan. Mum transferred the whiskey into an unmarked bottle and put the bottle at the bottom of the larder. She then refilled the whiskey with malt vinegar. Lovely on chips. Not as a drink. Well, I was in stitches, and within a few minutes, my mum was crying with laughter as well. My dear mum had simply forgotten that she'd swapped the contents and had innocently handed John half a glass of vinegar, which he downed in one, and then brought up again. Mum swore me to secrecy, and the pilferer never owned up. We laughed again, thinking that my brother or sister, because it was them, had probably also had a mouthful of vinegar as well. That's karma, folks. My mum, Pat, sadly passed away 21 years ago, far too young, a very good human being, and I can picture her laughing uncontrollably. She will no doubt be listening in some faraway place. So I don't ask forgiveness for my mum for attempting to poison our neighbour John, and unusually I'm not going to ask forgiveness for Bonnie and Clyde, the suspected sneaky culprits. I'm with Susie and Holly, the unforgivers. I can't forgive the sneak, and Matt should join us too. And as a footnote, I still visit John and Ina from time to time, especially at Christmas. I called in on them just before Christmas, and we still had a giggle, but we only served, nice fade there.
Yeah, very good.
The finest quality whiskey, no vinegar was consumed. Sister Holly speaks for production everywhere.
Well, my opinion is that honesty is the best policy. And maybe she should have just confronted her kids about this. She saw that the whiskey was down from where it should have been, and she should have chatted to them about it. An honest and frank conversation, which could have been had and saved all the trouble that this caused. He choked away on the vinegar. I mean, it was absolutely disgusting, revolting, not a good experience for anyone involved. The poor guy, I feel very sorry for him, and that's why I'm not forgiving at all.
Very good. That's the way you were brought up, and that's the way everyone should be brought up. Brother Matthew.
Not me. I'm going to forgive. I'm with Pat on this one. Very much a fan of the retribution punishment of filling up the whiskey with malt vinegar, which does beg the question, what were they putting on the chips? Probably whiskey as well. We go around for chips all around at their house. Also, who downs whiskey down in one, like John did? That's a ridiculous thing. You don't do that with single malt. John, if you know your whiskey. So, and so really, it was his fault. So, for that reason, I'm going to forget.
Confess All. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
I'd like to play a piece of music now, which we're not going to because we have to pay money. There's a band called the Felice Brothers who are around a few years ago, and they had a song which was called I Put Whiskey in My Whiskey, and it's very funny.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes. Right, okay. And if I played it now, everyone would say, wow, that's really well chosen.
but you've described it, which is almost as good.
Yeah, that's, to be honest, now I've told you the title. Yeah. That was
the bit. Why do they put whiskey in their whiskey?
I think
confused.
It was just having a, instead of putting water and diluting it, they just add a bit more.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, Carl in The People's Verdict seemed to relate to this story all too well.
Carl from Stoke Goldington says, not forgiven. When I was 14, I worked on a fish and chip van for a couple of weeks in the summer. On the way back, I needed a drink. I was so thirsty. I recalled a history lesson where we were told that the Romans drank vinegar. I took a glug and promptly brought it all up out of the open window down the side of the van.
Very nice and a beautiful story. Well told. Thanks, Mark. So still to come on the Confessions podcast, Victoria. Crime against cookery in Whenever I See Your Smiling Face. Jackie's prank phone call spirals out of control in Baby, You Can Steal My Car. First of all, it's Nobby's confession, which is called On the Conveyor Belt Tonight.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes from Nobby. Thanks, Nobby, for this tale, which is, it's like a PG certificate. Mildly distasteful.
Okay, well, that's pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simon and the team, having spent 2 weeks on the binge with your podcast, listening to defendants pleading their cases for forgiveness, I am inspired to confess my own mischievous admission from December 2014 for your judgment. Mm. This involves four of my closest friends. We'll call them Little Lee, Big Bob, Righteous Richard, and Bobby Gary. It was my first time on a train heading out to the Birmingham German-themed Christmas market.
Ah.
That's the first time he'd been to the market or the first time on a train? Don't know. Anyway, yes. It doesn't really
market,
matter. I'm He's on
guess.
The train.
Yeah.
And the train was packed tight, all the seats occupied, standing spaces filled with festive commuters. Righteous Richard was a regular train user for work purposes and led us through the hordes to a spacious standing space by this large semicircular pod at the front of a carriage. Like something from a science fiction movie, it was the fanciest lavatory stall I have ever seen, having two circular buttons with adjacent arrows flashing green. Pushing on an arrow with a hiss, the pod opened up slowly with a large door retreating into the wall, revealing the toilet. It pinged, having fully opened, and I stepped in, pressing the same button within the lavatory. It hummed shut. And here's the key point. Inside the toilet, there was a third button, aside the arrows, with a padlock on. And I pressed it, and it locked the pod, with the buttons flashing red. And I'm sure you may know which direction this story is going in, but bear with me.
Okay.
Having utilized the toilet, I exited, and Righteous Richard led us through the bustling city, where we dined on bratwurst, steak sandwiches, Bavarian beer, and chocolate. Now, Gobby Gary, who we all adore, is, we have to say, hard work. I imagine the writer who created Jay from The Inbetweeners may have met our Gary.
Oh, right.
After many hours, we were all rather tired of him and ambled back onto the train, our bellies filled with beer and food. Again, the train was busy with us squeezing back to the spacious spot by the fancy lavatory pod. Having examined the pod, Gary pushed the arrow, it hissed open and the door glided to a standstill. He stepped in, the door closed. More people piled into the train, with there now being a sizable audience for what was about to happen. Through some divine intervention, my attention was drawn to the flashing arrows on the lavatory, which were still green. I know they go red when that button with the padlock on is pressed. Therefore, this is open. Nudging my friends and pointing at the button, Little Lee nodded eagerly. Righteous Richard shook his head, scowling. Big Bob winked, giving me the thumbs up. We are a democracy after all, and the votes had been counted. Moving my finger toward the button, excitement coursed through my blood. My whole body trembled. Don't overact, Nobby. only to be thwarted by Righteous Richard, who grasped my wrist, giving me a dangerous stare. I conceded, knowing the right thing to do was to protect my friend's dignity. We stood guard at the door with my companions mindlessly gazing out of the window. Feeling a tap on my shoulder, a polite mother with two small children in either hand whispered if I was in the queue for the toilet. Side-eyeing Righteous Richard as he was preoccupied, Little Lee and Big Bob were deep in conversation and I said, "No, I am not," and I stepped aside. Exposing those green flashing buttons, the mum thanked me, inviting me what I can reasonably assume is her child to press the button which she obliged, removing her mitten. Hiss. The door slowly began to slide open. Realizing what was happening, Righteous Richard swung around, but it was too late. Like the grand prize being revealed on a 90s game show, the door unhurriedly opened. Unlike those 90s game shows, however, it wasn't a speedboat or an Austin Metro hidden behind the screen, but Gobby Gary, his face bright red, sat on the loo, wailing, "Close the door! Close the door!" Righteous Richard jumped into action, pounding at the button to close the door. Now, whether this was a design fault or a dodgy stall, it turns out you have to wait for the door to fully open before closing it.
Oh, no.
So silence spread across the carriage as the people turned to witness the palaver and peek from above their seats. The doors went very, very slowly and then ping as they opened to their fullest. Though it was mere seconds, they passed like hours as a subdued Gary looked out at the carriage of commuters who all looked back. Some sniggered, some were disgusted, but all fixated on Gary. And then eventually, hiss, and the door began to creep shut, gradually concealing Gary before closing. Ping went the door.
The carriage erupted into laughter, with this being one of our favourite tales to reflect on when talking about our youthful misdemeanours. He did, of course, get a round of applause.
That's
good.
I don't seek forgiveness from Gobby Gary or Righteous Richard, who was smoking for weeks after the incident and found it as funny as we did. I seek forgiveness from yourselves for the harm on the mother and the kids who may be living in shame due to the humiliation they unwittingly imposed on Gary. I rest my case and I await your judgment. Well, it's a very, very theatrical story, and I didn't know that the loo doors have to open fully before they're allowed to shut, that being a huge issue. Plus, lock the door. That's the major thing. Mm. See that thing with the padlock? Press the button. Sister Holly speaks first.
I feel really sorry for Gobby Gary. You know, he was just minding his own business, and there's nothing worse than being caught out while on the lavatory, and he was really, really embarrassed in front of his friends and in front of a whole carriage full of people. And Nobby could have stopped it, and that's the bad part here. And so that's why I'm not forgiving at all. He could have said to the mother and the children, "I'm so sorry, my friend is in there. It's occupied."
He chose not to.
But he chose not to.
I suspect we all know where Brother Matthew's going.
I'm going to go with the system on this one. The design the of those loos, the cistern, yes. The loos with the buttons, the number of times I've been in those and you're just like, have I pressed the right buttons here? Is that definitely locked? Whereas it used to be you just locked the door with the bar and the door you knew was definitely locked, and now you've got to press all the buttons and you're not sure. And the round of applause at the end, so that made it all right, didn't it?
No, it
and
didn't.
It was his own fault, really, in a way. And
well, it was his own fault. He was just to lock the door.
Yeah, lock the door, Gary. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Shh, shh. We won't tell anyone.
What's your secret? Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Okay, so today's confession comes from Jackie. Father Simon and the Confessional Collective, back in the early 80s and in our early 20s, a group of us worked at the head office of a well-known frozen food company. Our colleague, Louise, recently returned from honeymoon, came in this particular Friday very angry that her new husband kept leaving the house unlocked when he left for work.
Mm.
She was worried their lovely wedding presents would be stolen. I suggested if Tim, for that is his name, thought his much-prized Triumph Spitfire was at risk, he might attend to security more thoroughly. This idea developed into a bit of a thing, whereby we would pretend that his Spitfire had in fact been stolen, with the sole intention of frightening him into being more security conscious in future. To be convincing, we decided we'd need to pretend to be the police when we telephoned him at work to report the theft later that afternoon. Obviously, this is a very bad thing, which you should never do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Holly already, I think, disapproving.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, possibly not her real name, did a very good impersonation of a Scottish WPC at Richmond Police Station by adopting a fabulous Scots accent and employing the use of the word hen regularly. She telephoned Tim at work and told him that his car had been apprehended for speeding on the A3 and was discovered to be suspiciously loaded with a lot of household items crammed into the back, TVs, videos, hi-fi. On search the car, they found paperwork conveniently which identified Tim as the owner and a letter showing Tim's workplace address and telephone number. He was told the driver had confessed to burglary and had been arrested and taken to Richmond Police Station, that his car was now impounded and he'd have to collect it as soon as possible because we needed to ensure that Tim wouldn't go home first and realise it was a bit of a prank. Tim was asked to... We don't approve of pranks, by the way. Tim was asked to attend Richmond Police Station as soon as possible to identify his possessions before his car and items could be returned to him, and he had to ensure he arrived by 4 p.m. Friday, otherwise he would incur storage charges. This seems very unlikely.
Goodness.
Tim and a colleague left work immediately and headed to Richmond Police Station, where his friend dropped him off just as it started to pour with rain. Sadly, Tim was in his work clothes of jeans and a T-shirt. Who goes to work dressed like that? And he didn't have a coat, but since he was collecting his car, it wouldn't matter. Oh, well, never mind. Of course, nobody at Richmond Police Station knew anything at all about any theft of his vehicle, but did politely explain that WPC 007 was likely a clue that it had not been a genuine call from them. They didn't offer such a personalised service to reunite owners with their stolen goods after all. Did he know anybody who would play such an unpleasant prank on him? No, Tim didn't know. Who would do such a thing? He pondered all this on his way home in the rain. Tim set about trying to make his way home from Richmond, not an area he was familiar with, to the other side of Surrey by public transport, since he had no car to drive in. He couldn't get a taxi, as traffic during Friday rush hour was a nightmare, and gridlocked, as anyone who lives in Richmond knows. By using public transport, he eventually got home at a ridiculously late hour, very wet and very, very cold. Meanwhile, back at home, Louise had prepared a nice dinner for when Tim returned, expecting them to have a laugh and a joke about it when the penny dropped. Yeah. But of course, dinner was now, in best sitcom tradition, ruined and burned. However, having first checked his beloved car was in the garage when he arrived home, gone 9 p.m, it was obvious to Tim that Tim had no idea who was behind the prank. Whilst Louise felt very guilty, rather than come clean, she felt she had to go with the flow and instead acted accordingly by adopting the aggrieved wife stance. She pretended she was angry. She'd waited for him to eat dinner, which was now ruined. And on hearing his story of what happened to him, she said, "I don't believe you. You're having an affair."
What?
"And you're having an affair to cover up. That's what's happening. Yeah, and I don't believe a word of your sorry tale."
No.
She played the part very well by going to bed early in apparently a foul mood. This last part particularly had us in stitches, Father Simon, when she told us this at work on Monday. We did ask if he ever suspected us, but she said he had absolutely no idea. Nor was she ever going to tell him. Ever. Well, until now.
Oh.
"I beg forgiveness from all your good selves, but in particular Tim, who after a long week at work was sent on a wild goose chase and needlessly spent hours in rush hour traffic, cold and wet, getting home to an angry wife to be accused of having an affair. Forgiveness from Louise, who may or may not have been told Tim of her involvement today. To Richmond police staff and any other persons caught up in Tim's unnecessary journey. That, lots of love from Jackie, possibly not my real name." I suspect it's almost certainly not your real name. But it is Richmond Police who get the apology, but do they get forgiveness from Sister Holly?
Take a wild guess. Honestly, what a mess! What a mess this was. Firstly, impersonating a police officer, never good. Absolute disaster. I hate pranks, just all in all, never a good idea.
Yes, yes.
He then wasted the actual Richmond Police Station's time because he turned up there. He then had to get public transport all the way in Surrey. I know the public transport in Surrey and it's not good. It's not good. Poor guy. He then got home. She then said he was having an affair. I mean, the whole thing was a mess. Was she not even very happy to be with him or something? And that was just a convenient excuse. Honestly, dreadful, not forgiving at all.
It's a torrid tale,
it really
the way,
was. Really
the way
was.
You tell it, anyway. Brother Matthew.
So I'm going to forgive. I think, I mean, obviously you were teaching him a lesson and it was all very, very contrived and probably went too far and therefore perfect, in my opinion. But we come back to the central question, which is who goes out the house and leaves the house unlocked? Absolutely ridiculous behaviour, Tim. And frankly, you had what was coming.
Yes.
You and your Triumph Spitfire, you were locking that at night, weren't you? But you weren't locking the house when you were leaving. And I'm pretty confident that Tim never left the house unlocked again. So in a way, everyone learned a lesson, and for that reason,
and
I'm
crime
going.
Came down
crime
as a result.
Came down as a result. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Confess all, Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
I enjoyed listening back to that because it was nice to hear Holly getting really on it.
Yes. And yeah.
And there are a whole number of things that really, this is not the way the world should be.
No.
I get very invested when I'm
here. Good. That's the way to do it. Yeah.
I think that was quite right. Anyway, and it's very nice to have you playing a lead role in this podcast.
Quite right.
Thank you. That's nice.
And Susie will obviously be listening to this. So we say get well soon.
Please.
Yes, please.
Susie. You sounded a little bit desperate there.
It did sound too desperate. Sorry. Get well if you can.
Now, normally this would be the end of the podcast. However, we have an extra confession to sneak in. Our final confession of last year, which aired on Monday the 23rd of December, so therefore it didn't sneak into any of the podcasts. Get back into a little bit of the Christmas spirit for Victoria's tale, "Whenever I See Your Smiling Face."
Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
Confession comes from Victoria in South Somerset. Thank you, Victoria. Father Simon, I've thought for many years that it's time to avail myself to you for a confession. And finally, this year, I make my approach. I write to you, Father Simon, as a 50-plus married woman, but once upon a time, I was a mere schoolgirl.
This confession goes back to those times, a year we should call the wilderness year of secondary school. This is the third year, the midway year of five-year secondary school life, now called, bafflingly, year nine.
Yeah, who understands that?
The year before, things get more serious for the GCSE work. The year you ditch French and PE. The year when pupils' behaviour is the most confident, but such confidence is not matched by effort. The year most teachers most probably dread. Adding to the teacher's strain, my confession relates to the last week of the term before breakup for Christmas holidays, a week that teachers are padding out with Christmas word searches and other nonsensical content. My classmates and I wandered into our home economics lesson, aka cookery. We brought with us no pre-prepared ingredients of 100 grams of this and that, and we said to our teacher, widely known to be in a relationship with a design tech teacher.
Oh, good, I like this.
Sticking to the traditional roles, you see. What are we doing today, miss? Today, class, she said, you will be making mince pies.
Ooh.
Oh, yes, nice. We said, we love mince pies, but we haven't got any ingredients. Don't worry, came the reply, I have everything we need. And she did. So we set about in our groups, first making the pastry, cutting it out and placing it in trays. Next came the filling, each ingredient carefully weighed out before being mixed in. As we finished mixing everything together, we were aware that our class was soon to end, but they still needed time to cook. The filling left sitting in large mixing bowls, ready to be scooped into the pastry. Don't worry, said the teacher, I will sort the rest out. Thanks, miss, we said, what time shall we come and collect them? And it's at this point, Father Simon, that things turned sour. Oh, they're not for you, she said. They're for the staff Christmas party.
What?
What a nerve.
Wow.
And with that, she left the room.
Oh, brilliant.
Which was quite possibly one of her biggest mistakes. Mm. Well, 15 jaded 13-year-olds started to plot revenge for this abuse of labour. The revenge consisted of continuing the cooking by adding extra ingredients to the filling.
Oh, dear.
Father Simon, it is difficult to recall exactly what else went into the mincemeat, but certainly it can hide a multitude of sins, including hair, dust, pencil sharpenings, and a sprinkling of mud from the flower beds in each of the windows.
Okay.
Mud.
And who knows what else?
Oh.
All mixed in and perfectly disguised. The teacher returned to find 15... It was 13 earlier, but there are two more have appeared. Angelic faces smiling at her. And as we grabbed our coats to go, we wished her a happy Christmas as we left the room. We never heard further as to the impact of our cooking. We certainly imagined our teachers coming across the extra ingredients. That's a crunchy one, at their staff party. But they all return next year, sadly, so no disasters, it would appear. I beg forgiveness for taking part in such antics on defenceless teachers. However, in my defence, I will add, we were ruthlessly taken advantage of. Child labour is what I call it. I now throw myself on your mercy. Victoria, South Somerset. My real name is Victoria. There were so many of us in our school, it doesn't really narrow it down.
Really? That's okay. Loads of Vickies. Yeah.
Bless you and beware of mince pies. Well, certainly mince pies that have been made by a disgruntled class who have every reason to feel taken advantage of. So, I like that very much indeed. It made a lot of people smile, I think. But Sister Susie, I think you're going to be stern as ever.
Yeah, I also like it, and I really enjoy it. It was a very funny story. However, that is just disgusting. I don't care if you were taken advantage for putting mud in something that someone's going to eat. Pencil. Hair?
Yes, and other things.
Disgusting. No, thank you. Not forgiven, I'm afraid.
What would you add? No, I don't mean that. What do you make of that, Brother Matthew?
Well, I have to say, I'd have done the same if I'd been one of those users. How very dare they expect me to make the mince pies, do all of that work, and then it turns out I'm making them for the staff Christmas party. Also, if I was a member of staff there and someone said, would you like a mince pie? Oh, lovely, who made these mince pies? A bunch of disaffected third-year students. I'd have said, no thanks, not having any of them. Bet they didn't even bother bringing in the correct ingredients. So, for all of those reasons, I'm going to forgive, and because it's Christmas.
Yes.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
So that's how we finished up end of last year.
Feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does feel like a long time ago, but it did bring me an odd thought, which was, just listening to that confession over again, clearly it was weak teaching. And clearly they were asking for trouble. So and I'm not necessarily condoning what they put in there, but I remember in my first week, first month anyway, at Radio 1, Steve Wright said to me, his big piece of advice.
Oh, no.
Never eat any food that's sent in the post.
No.
That's so correct, though. Yeah.
Then he told a story about a cake he'd been sent, which, when they sliced open, had suspiciously curly hair in it. That's what I'm saying.
So,
in general,
okay,
if you've seen it prepared, that's fine. Mm. If you have prepared it yourself, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you've bought it from a shop and it's wrapped, I think that's probably mm-hmm. fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But something that's been prepared by someone who might wish you ill.
Don't do that.
I don't think you should do that. No. Anyway, let's go over to, if you've got a confession, we would love to have it, please, for next week. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. And then we can discuss it on the pod and also on the air. But here we go to Brother Matt's place for this week's secret code phrase.
And the secret code phrase this week is from that first confession, Goose Kaput, which is your phrase from the Belarusian. Anyway, that was, yes, from the first confession, Goose Kaput. Kaput, kaput, goose. So either of those two will work. Send either of those to Simon Mayo on the usual methods.
Okay, that's right. You could just call in at reception.
Call in at reception.
No.
Cross the road. Stop him in the street.
So goose kaput.
Goose kaput.
Okay. Yes. But it has to be with some kind of clear Ukrainian / Belarusian inflection.
Throw in an umlaut there.
An emoji.
Yeah, yes.
One of those. Anyway, if you listen this far, I mean, I'll be amazed. You can thread me at Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads, or you can post it on Blue Sky, where, as I think I've said for a while, all the cool people go.
They are.
And also, they still have fact checkers.
Just a thing.
Finally, will that be okay?
Yes.
Good,
yes.
Very good. Don't forget to share your confessions, please. Send them in to confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Tell your friends the Confessions podcast is back. Until then, from the tack cupboard, but also out on the loose, Sister Holly says...
Hasta la vista, baby.
From the gutter, Brother Matthew.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. See you soon.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.